everybody. Welcome to the Drunk Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger. And today I have the special privilege. This is so fitting that we are doing the first podcast of 2021. We are starting it out right with JM Mannion. I'm so excited you're here. Just to give the audience a brief description about him, if you do not know this man, he is the co-owner of a multimedia company, JM Mannion Productions Incorporated. He is the NBC News chief photographer, lead journalist, and assistant creative director. He has been a professional photographer for the last 35 years, and in my opinion, he is the master of candid photos and lighting. Some of you may know him as Batman. So welcome, JM, to the show. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. So I know whenever we spoke backstage at the USA, you know, I said, let's start off the new year right.
That's right. And this is the best way to do it. So thank you so much for spending time. Can you tell our audience a little bit about your family and kind of where you live and a little bit more about you personally?
Well, born and raised and still lived in Pittsburgh, black and yellow. as everybody knows, that's seems to be when you're born here, those are your two favorite colors. I don't think you have an option any other way.
That's the Batman colors too.
Yes, ironically it is, you know, but yeah, my dad's here. This is where the home of the NPC is, where the NPC office has been forever. Since they started, it's been in Pittsburgh, and you know, just been here. I had, like, over the years, I had years ago opportunities to move to other places to work, but I never did, and I'm actually glad I didn't, because that was in the pre-digital age, the last century, and you know, it would have been it would have been crazy now in the digital age to have moved. So I could say I'm super happy that I never did, you know, and yeah. So, and then, like, I'm sure people have known my father, who's the president of the NPC and IFBB Pro League now, but you know, at one point he was just a competitor like everybody else. And he actually won the 1971 Mr. Pittsburgh and 1973 Mr. Pennsylvania. So he was always a competitor himself.
And did you watch his shows?
Yeah, they used to drag me to those when I was a kid.
What was your perspective of seeing him as a competitor?
I don't remember a whole lot.
Okay.
To be honest. And but I mean, you know, I do remember as I got a little bit older, to give you an idea of, as everybody just saw, the Olympia stage and the national stage and the USA stage. When my dad competed, it was usually in either like a gymnasium somewhere from a high school or a YMCA or something. And they would tie a 100-watt bulb to the basketball hoop. And a lot of times they'd have like a picnic table or something with a sheet thrown over it. And that was your stage.
Oh, that was gosh. It. A picnic table? He stood on a picnic.
Yes.
Wow, that's incredible.
And then for comparisons, everybody stood on the floor and they turned the lights back on in the gym.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And that was how you got judged. I mean, in natural whatever lighting. And or bodybuilding used to be considered like a second class sport. So they would have these contests after a powerlifting meet, which I don't remember too much, but my dad would say, there were times where they actually did not go on stage till 11 or 12 at night.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And they'd have to wait for the powerlifting meet to be over.
Us bikini athletes, we can kind of relate to that.
Yes. Yes. You know, but you've sat there all day.
Wow.
From like, you know, 7 or 8 in the morning and,
holding,
you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Trying to do that from back in the day. But, you know, so, I mean, things have obviously progressed quite a bit from that time.
Yeah. And, so with the NPC, I consider it the Cadillac of all of the organizations, and that originated in 1981. Is that correct?
No.
No.
Actually, The National Physique Committee used to be a part of the AAU back in the day.
Okay.
So it was at one point, it was the National Physique Committee of the AAU. And until my father ran for president, it was run by former powerlifters and okay. weightlifters, people that had that absolutely knew nothing about bodybuilding. So my father ran for president back in 1977 and pretty much won it unopposed because there was everybody wanted to get it out of the powerlifters' hands and things like that. So he had the backing of Gold's Gym, the one and only Gold's Gym at the time. There was no other Gold's Gym but the one in California.
Okay.
And yeah. And so he was the first bodybuilder to ever run the organization.
Wow.
When you think about it, it's pretty crazy.
That is incredible. And
yeah.
The IFBB Pro League, I was actually in San Marino when you were and you and Robin were I think that was his name, were making the announcement for the split of the IFBB
yes.
Pro League, which that was
yes.
just in 2018, correct?
Right, but the IFBB Pro League had been in existence since 2004 because Ben okay. Weider himself, the president of the IFBB, formed the IFBB Pro League, IFBB Professional League, as a separate entity in 2004.
Okay.
So, but without going into details, let's just put it this way, is Ben, forward thinking, I guess you could say, he had it so that if anything would happen to him, because at one point he basically stepped away and he had appointed my father the president of the IFBB Pro League while he was still alive, while Ben was still living. So he did that. And so when Ben's unfortunate passing happened, everything transferred over to my father at that point. And the offices were still in Montreal, Canada at that point. But, they were eventually moved to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
So that's the short end of it. And as you say, we split from the old IFBB amateur. And, at that Olympia, and the San Marino was the first contest for us, doing the IFBB Professional League separately. The basis of the formation of MPC Worldwide at the time, which would eventually happen. And that was a crazy time. It was very crazy. But it was very successful, and it was something that needed to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. It's given people from all around the world so many opportunities to be able to earn pro status on a more fair playing level. In my opinion.
Well, and a lot of these countries didn't award pro qualification to a lot of amateurs. I did an interview, a Zoom interview, with a competitor, a men's bodybuilder from Brazil, okay, mm-hmm. who told me that he won the Brazilian national champions three consecutive years overall.
Oh, wow.
And they wanted him to continue to do the world championships, the amateur world championships representing Brazil, so they would not grant him his IFBB Pro card. And he actually went and won that world championships 3 years in a row also. So eventually he was able with the split happening to be granted his pro status.
That's awesome.
Based on his history. So to give you an example for everybody, that would be like winning the NPC Nationals for three consecutive years.
Wow.
Overall.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And I know
having
you're...
to come back and keep doing it,
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know Angelica Teixeira had quite the journey as well. And your father was obviously instrumental in her getting her pro card as well.
Yes.
So, okay. So when I kind of think back to, you know, when I used to first even call the MPC office, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, Teresa was working there. And now I believe your daughter, Cassie, is she there as well?
Yeah, her, she is actually working there with Teresa. Yeah.
Okay. And then Tyler, can you tell us a little bit about him for those of you that don't kind of know the, for those listeners that don't know the family history and everything, your son?
Well, he always had an interest in this. And, you know, he was always interested in judging and different things like that. And, like, to give you an idea, when he'd be sitting at home or eventually in his college apartment watching contests or waiting for the pictures to show up on NBC News Online, he used to send me who he thought the winners would end up being. Uh-huh. And just based on him not even being there, he was usually right around 95% of the time and in order.
That's incredible.
He ended up test judging just like any other judge. I mean, easily my dad could have told him, could have just appointed him, right? But mm-hmm. he wanted him to go through what everybody else goes through. So he did the test judging just like everybody else that you know is a judge. Mm-hmm. So, and he had to take the test like everybody else. So, yeah, it wasn't just handed to him.
Oh, no.
And
Definitely not.
You know, and yeah, I remember when he took the national judges test, and you know, my father was waiting to hear back from the statistician of the people that you know, took the test, and basically, you know, he wanted to see how Tyler did. And I remember, you know, the lady calling him, and she's really low key. Like, she's not a person that kind of jokes or anything. Uh-huh. And I remember we were standing in my dad's office, and she's like, and he's like, well, you know, how did Tyler do it? She's like, oh, Mr. Mannion. And I could see my dad just looking at me. She goes, I don't know what to tell you. She goes, you know, I really thought that Tyler being your grandson, that he'd get 100%. And she just stops there. My dad's looking at me. She goes, he only got 98% right.
Wow. That's incredible.
Well, and the divisions my dad had him judge were, as he said, the toughest divisions. And this was at an NPC national contest. So he judged men's bodybuilding, men's physique, and bikini. Now, mind you, at that time, there were still only six classes in bikini. So you know how those middle classes used to be huge. They'd be like mm-hmm. the C&D class could have 30, 40 competitors in them.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. And for those unaware, when you're doing the judging with these larger classes, if you've ever seen the scores, usually they'll judge to 15 and then everybody else is 16. But with these larger divisions like that, uh-huh. They'll judge up to like 20 or 25.
Oh,
well, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll see that on different scores. It depends on how many is in the class.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, you can see that the score sheets, a lot of them are on, you know, NPC News Online. But let's be honest, anything after the top 10, that's where your scores can get messed up.
Right.
You know, so, you know, he's, like I said, he's always had an eye for that. You know, even sitting at home watching it on an iPad or a computer.
That's awesome. So, and he has a sports background, just like Cassie. I know he was college.
Yeah, they were both student athletes. You know, she was a soccer player. Or as interestingly enough, when I started traveling, especially that show in San Marino, every country that I went to, they would all say, oh, your daughter's the football player.
Oh, because, yeah. soccer,
right?
World.
And the first couple
here.
Of times they called me off guard. I'm like, no, she's soccer. And they're like, yeah, football. And they're like, you know, real football. That's what we call it. I'm like, oh my God. You know? So like literally every country I was in, they'd be like, oh, your daughter's the football player. And I'd be, yes, she is. Can you imagine saying that here in America? People look at you like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah, exactly. That's so funny.
You know, but yeah, I mean, she got a you know, an athletic scholarship to college with that, just like Tyler did. And, you know, Tyler was a wrestler. And I mean, they played these, you know, sports, you know, forever. So
yeah.
And, you know, so they both went to school on, you know, scholarships, and, you know, and they got their degrees and everything, and they both graduated with honors, and
you must be very proud.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, actually growing up, you know, my wife used to tell them, listen, if you don't have the academics, you don't get the athletics.
Right. Very smart lady.
Yes.
So in terms of just your journey personally in the sport, can you kind of tell us how you got your start and what kind of inspired you to be what you are today?
I think I got my start the day I was born. I don't think I had a choice.
But when you look back over the years, is there something
about it?
Well,
let's put it this way.
Okay.
Nobody in our family is ever allowed to compete.
Okay. So how do you feel about that?
No matter what, you know, Tyler could go out there and look like, you know, Raymond or Brandon Hendrickson or Chris Bumstead, whatever, be the whatever men's division, Big Rami. He could be Little Rami. Wouldn't matter, because it would always, someone would always say that it would be tainted because of the last name.
Okay.
You know,
makes sense.
You know, Cassie, actually, I don't think Cassie would have been able to compete until this year anyways, because she's definitely built like a wellness competitor. And she'll be the first one to tell you that also.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you talk to a lot of these football players, the soccer players that are now in wellness, they're, most of them are in wellness now. They played soccer their entire lives.
Right. That's definitely the build, that lower half, the large legs and things like that.
Well, as we say, it's a very athletic build.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just to give a little bit of a insight while we're on that topic, what do you think about the wellness division this year and kind of how it's been established and the pros that have come about in wellness? What are some of the things that you've seen that stand out to you? Because the pros that have competed, they're obviously, they had crossed over. So now this year, 2021, we're going to have, you know, wellness pros competing that have earned their pro status in wellness.
Yeah, so there's going to be a wellness Olympia in 2021. So.
Right. So what are your thoughts on that division and how it's gone this year? I know it's been a
crazy
year.
Well, how about I'll try to make this cliff notes. So a couple of years ago, Johnny Styles, if any of you know Johnny, he's been beating the drum for wellness for years. And we were always like, no, don't need it. And I'll be the first one to tell you, just like everybody else, I thought it was just a bunch of, you know, bikini or figure competitors that couldn't get in shape with big booties, right? So go to Colombia for the Olympia Amateur and saw that. First time I saw wellness, and I stayed to watch it. It was a wellness model search, right? So I stayed to watch it because I'm like, okay, I want to see what this is all about. And I remember standing there with Joe Pishkula, one of our NPC judges and promoters, and we're standing there watching it. And I'm like, I looked at him. I'm like, Joe, I had a completely different idea of what this was about, because I was really educated. And I was just like, wow, this is definitely way different than I thought. And as I remember going through the expo at this Amateur Olympia down in Medellin, and these wellness competitors coming up to me, and they're all like, they were literally finding me. And this expo is huge, by the way. I mean, it was an expo that's on the level of an Arnold in the Olympia, right?
Okay.
They're like, please have your father bring wellness. You know, we want to be IFBB Pro League. We want to be MPC. And the more I saw it and I started communicating with these, you know, women, and a lot of them could speak broken English, or we used a lot of Google Translator or different things. And come to find out, I would say easily 90% were some form of an athlete. And it's not just soccer. I mean, I found, track and field, dance, gymnastics. The interesting one that I kept hearing, especially in Brazil, where they were beach volleyball players. And I'm like, So since a kid, you've been jumping up and down in the beach playing a sport for 15 years or so. Yeah. It was pretty much built up your lower body, right?
Yeah, talk about some lower body development for sure.
You know, so once we started seeing these and seeing them in Europe and stuff, and the funny thing is everybody associates wellness with Brazil, which is where it originally started. There's a lot of competitors that are in Europe, but just with the way that the way 2020 went, you haven't been able to see them, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be very fun and interesting to see those that qualified here in the United States, the Europeans against those in South America.
Yes. Yes.
You know, finally on a pro stage.
Absolutely.
You know? But it was just like, so eventually, I was won over. I was won over that day in Colombia. And then, of course, when I saw it in Brazil, I was like, okay, this is a slam dunk. I don't know why we're not doing this.
Right.
And I remember we were at the Arnold in Brazil, and Steve Weinberger was there to judge the men's pro bodybuilding contest. So he stayed to watch. That he had never seen wellness. So here, let me just give you an idea. That contest had 600 competitors for the Arnold Amateur in Brazil.
Oh, wow.
Okay. It was an NPC worldwide contest. Now, the wellness was just still, because it was still just a wellness model search. Well, the rest of them that were in the Arnold Amateur Brazil were fighting it out for a pro card. Because they would get a pro card. The wellness did not. They got a tiara. And a thank you very much and a picture. Of the 600 competitors, okay, 90 of them were in the wellness model search. So 1/6 of the contest that didn't even qualify to turn pro were in that competition.
Wow.
And Steve and I stood up at one point. I did a video. I did a 180 behind me to show the audience. They were literally at standing room only at the pre-judging for wellness. The only other time that there was that many people was for the pro men's bodybuilding. So I take that video and I text it to my father via WhatsApp. And I'm like, look at this audience. And I didn't tell him who it was. And he's like, he goes, yeah. He goes, I know the men's pro bodybuilding is so popular down there. I go, wrong. This is the pre-judging for wellness.
Wow.
and Steve Weinberger kept looking at me going, oh my God. He goes, I didn't understand it either. I'm like, you get it now, Steve? And he's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, we need this in the NPC, in the IFBB Pro League. So, you know, it was a matter of, you know, I liked it. Tyler had seen it. He liked it. Sandy Williamson, she liked it. There were so many people. So it was literally waiting to just get my father's approval. And, you know, and explaining it to him because he had truly never seen it. Interestingly enough, the only wellness competitor he had ever seen was Brandon Hendrickson's girlfriend, Barbara, who she won down at the Chicago Pro in Atlanta, and she placed at the Universe. She was, when Brandon was doing a Road to the Olympia at the NPC Photo Gym, she was there. And she's from Brazil. So we said to my dad, this is what wellness looks like. Right.
Gotcha.
And the funny part is he doesn't even, I don't think he completely knows her real name, but every time he sees her, he's like, hey, wellness, how you doing?
That's funny. I saw Brandon in the gym at the hotel at the Chicago Pro. And he was sharing with me that his girlfriend was competing in wellness for the first time. So
yeah,
cool. So in terms
so once my dad kind of got an idea, he realized, you know, and all of us talking to him about it. So, you know, once he saw it, he realized what it was about. So he was the last person we needed to get convinced.
Yeah. So do you feel like with all of the variables that happened this year, do you feel like we were able to capture what the true look of wellness is, or do you think it'll continue to evolve in 2021? And it's not quite exactly the athletes because we weren't able to have, you know, the different countries come in and things like that.
Oh, no. Because we had around the world, people were having wellness contests.
Okay.
I mean, okay. As I did an interview with Jacinda Sharkey from Australia. As I said, she's kind of the forgotten wellness pro because she won the Arnold Amateur Australia wellness. And then the world went into its pandemic lockdown.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So she's been sitting over there since last March, not being able to do anything, not being able to travel. So we have girls like her, ladies like her. We have other ones that are throughout Europe. We have other ones that are in different parts. I think collectively around the world where they've had wellness, it is going by the standard that we had set. It's just eventually getting them all on the same stage. Now, we had the one pro contest that was the only qualifier for the Olympia for next year down in Brazil. And yes, all the competitors were from Brazil, but we're going to see more. Like the Tampa Pro had wellness, but it was not a pro qual. It was not an Olympia qualifier.
So Renee is not qualified for the Olympia.
No. Okay. And there was also a pro wellness at the NPC European and the IPB Pro League European, but that was not a qualifier.
Okay.
All the qualifiers for the Wellness Olympia, since the last contest to qualify for 2020 was the Chicago Pro, you know, / Atlanta. So everything after that was a qualifier.
Okay.
So for 2021, that's why the contests that were before that, since there was no Wellness Olympia for this year, for this year, 2020, that was never a plan to have it in 2020.
Gotcha.
Because of the Miss Olympia coming back also. But so that's why we had to wait till after that contest, and that's been the only pro qualifier. That was the first pro qualifier after that. So
yeah, we wouldn't want to shadow the Miss Olympia coming back. So Speaking of that,
but I think that we've set the tone for wellness. And here's something that I know that nobody else really realizes because I've only talked to people amongst us ourselves. So in this crazy year of 2020, the COVID year and everything else going on, never in my wildest dreams would I have thought that the NPC USA Championships at the end of the year, which is our last true NPC pro qualifier, because the Olympia Amateurs and NPC Worldwide contest, that there were more wellness competitors entered in the USA than there were figure competitors.
Oh, yeah. That's incredible.
That's like, yeah. I would have ventured to say maybe we'd start seeing that in 2021. For us to see it at the end of 2020, as I jokingly, semi-jokingly said, and I put a hashtag out, said, the takeover has started. I would have never guessed that. I could have bet you $5 million that would never have happened in 2020.
Interesting.
And I don't think, and there's nobody else that would have thought it either. I mean, even talking with Tamer and Tarek, and it's their contest, and they were like, we double check. We want to make sure that what we're saying is actually true. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, the fact that they were able to pull that off in Phoenix. So it's not even someplace where you would think that would be at Nationals in Florida or somewhere else. Yeah. So I think that wellness is, without being cliche, well on its way. And I think I can't wait for this year and the following years to have it going. So in the end, I will again say, and I've said this a million times, thank you to Johnny Styles for introducing me to it, for bugging the heck out of me for years.
Yes, I want to thank him too, because I had a competitor in wellness, and then so did my co-host, Chris Nicole. She had a competitor in wellness at USA's. So yeah, it was cool to be part of that history. When you think about the past year and just all the adjustments and the hurdles and obstacles that people have had to overcome with COVID, what are some of the biggest things that stand out in your mind that people took a negative maybe and turned it into a positive?
Let's start with the North American Championships here in Pittsburgh. We were at the Junior USA, me, Tyler, Sandy, Gary Udit was head judging the Optimum contest down in Louisiana that weekend. My father was here, and the governor of Pennsylvania does a semi basically locked on just for Allegheny County, which is where that's where Pittsburgh resides, right in the middle of. And we could now not have any audience. So we were already going to be having this in a tent because of previous restrictions. Now we have to have it in a tent with no audience. Okay, so the tent that all of you saw and or competed in Pittsburgh was basically only one third of the original tent. The configuration of the tent was going to be facing another direction. But being able to do that with crossovers, it was around 2,000 competitors. And it was also the first contest that the Canadian and the Mexican athletes were able to participate in. They had nothing in their country before that. So I think taking that, going with a new format as we did on the first day, on that Wednesday, we had the Masters Pro Bikini and the Amateur Bikini, mm-hmm. and we were literally flying by the seat of our pants. And, you know, everybody, we'd never done the format before, which most of you that have been to contests know how the format runs now. But imagine doing that on the fly, having that, there was no way to test it. You literally had to do it as the contest was happening. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody was, I wouldn't say they weren't confident, but they were just like keeping our fingers crossed. And we started right at 8 o'clock, and by 12 noon, everybody was like, okay, this works. We can do this. It's going to work. And I'll tell you what, it was, you know, tremendous, you know, applause to everybody involved, from the expediters to the athletes, to the judges, to everybody that was involved, and take that format and move it forward to use with other contests. And I know my father was adamant, being that the contest was in Pittsburgh, that this contest would happen. You know, and I know a lot of people have said, well, why didn't you guys just move it? And I'm like, it's not as easy as that. We had literally less than 4 days to make this happen. I remember when this thing came out, it was on a Friday from the governor of PA. And on Saturday morning, we were all on a conference call together, everybody with my father, trying to figure out what we're going to do. And when you consider, like I said, that Gary, Tyler, Sandy, and I, and we're all out of town. So it was, you know, to put this stuff together, and Gary's crew that he had back in Pittsburgh, it was pretty crazy. Plus, you have these international competitors coming in. You know, to change a hotel and try to change a venue, it just was not feasible at that point.
Yeah, I remember I caught Gary Yuta on the elevator, I think the day before, and he's like, we got you guys a live feed. I remember it was raining. They had to shuttle over there. I was screaming my head off, looking at my phone, watching the live feed, you know, and it was just the competitors over there. It was quite the moment in history. I was just so grateful that you all worked so hard to make that happen, because I just felt like it made that momentum for the rest of the year. It didn't matter if the shows were moved to a different date, a different location. It's like, it was kind of like that yes moment, like this is going to start happening, which was really incredible.
Yes. I mean, Trey Bennett had the Junior USA, which is what we were at. And he had, you know, kind of the format of, you know, different days and for everything. And, you know, he had a partial audience, but this was really going to no audience. And, you know, the decision was made to do the live, feed for free. And, you know, And it got crazy. I mean, literally trying to put that whole thing together. Listen, everybody came together for that contest. And as I wrote in a post the other day, which everybody seemed to miss, I said, in the 35 years of doing this professionally, I've never seen the NPC and IFBB Pro League, everybody involved, more united than they were this year. Everybody realized we all have the same problems. We all have the same issues, but we're all on the same team.
Yeah.
No matter where it is. And I think that has been one of the things to take away from this was, you know, how much everybody pulled together.
Absolutely. So what changes do you think to the show format will be adopted for 2021? Do you think they'll stick with, I know some of the shows, you know, we would do the finals and the prejudging all at once.
I think it depends. It depends on the state and the city. As I explain to people, listen, you hear this state's open, that state's open. Okay, that's what the governor says. But the local government decides to take things into their own hands and change it. So what could be happening in the town that I live in, the suburb of Pittsburgh, could be different than the suburb side of where my father lives, okay, or where the kids live. So you can't even do that. It all depends on the local ordinances. And I think that's just something, again, that we have to roll with.
Right.
You know, so I can't really say what is and isn't going to work because, and we don't know what's going to happen from week to week.
Sure.
I mean, it's literally, again, everything is happening on the fly. So people are just literally, you know, doing whatever they can to make it work and have contingency plans and everything else.
So I don't mean to put you on the spot, but do you know if they will maintain the date range in December for the Olympia? And what effect will that, the Olympia being pushed back, have on the Arnold? Have you guys, are you allowed to say?
Both of those are to be determined.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it wouldn't be my place to actually announce it because that would be the place of the Olympia and the Arnold to make their announcements.
Okay. Yeah. So what are some things that you saw that were really great about having the new ownership for the Olympia this year? There were quite a few changes. Obviously, location was one, but I'm sure a lot of that was COVID driven. So what are some positive things that you've seen happen in this past year's Olympia in 2020?
Let's put it this way. I will say this. If Jake Wood had not owned the Olympia, I would say my personal opinion, and this is not the opinion of anybody else in my family, my personal opinion is the Olympia would have been canceled.
Okay.
I think Jake Wood and his commitment and his whole team, you know, Dan Solomon, you know, Tamer El-Gindy, Tim Gardner, Caden Riley, and the whole crew, they all know who they are. And what they did was, you know, having basically 2 weeks to design a brand new Olympia stage and 2 weeks to construct it is amazing and move it across country. Basically, the only thing that you saw on those stages that were on the previous Olympia stages were those big Olympia signs that hung overhead. The big O and the red O and the Olympia and the amateur Olympia. Everything else they did. Everything else, none of that stuff was brought from Las Vegas.
Yeah. That's crazy.
So
that's a very short timeline to work from. Another incredible feat.
Yeah, as I said to people, whenever we got there from the USA and we went up to look at them building the stage, I go, well, I know they canceled a bunch of, you know, musical concerts this year, and the music festivals and everything. And I go, well, everyone's going to get it here at the Olympia because that was a concert. I said rock and roll stage.
That's awesome.
You know, incredible sound system, the visuals, the way it was put together. I said, so anybody that missed going to concerts in 2020 and was able to be at the Olympia finals, they got their rock concert for them.
Yes, absolutely. So I know firsthand that this year you had to do an outdoor shoot for the Bikini Pros at the Tahoe show, the center podium contest. So were there any?
Oh, let's talk about that contest real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, never in 35 years would I have thought to say that I covered two contests in a tent within 3 weeks of each other. One with an audience, one without an audience, and then one with an audience. So people, if you don't realize, Chris Minnis had to move it outside. The tent was literally, because there's a golf course there, the tent was literally on the 18th hole. And you're looking, and you're probably looking right now thinking, and I'm like, think about this.
Gorgeous.
You had to find someplace flat. So the green, the putting green of the hole, you had to have it there.
Uh-huh.
So that's literally where it was. And I don't think people realize that the like walkway and stuff where you would take your golf carts or walk was literally underneath the bottom of the tent. It literally went right through the middle of it.
Yeah. Well, and they had told me that I was the sponsor of the show, and they had said that they had to actually tear the entire thing down. They had built the entire tent And then there was something about the permit, so they had to completely rebuild it again on Friday. They stayed up till midnight doing it.
Yeah, I was down there with Chris until from like 10:30 to midnight for doing the lighting. And, you know, it was, I don't care that it was September, it was cold. It was even cold by my standards.
I agree.
Yes. And everybody else that was there didn't really think about it. And they're all shivering and you can see your breath. And I'm like, okay, it's literally 32 degrees right now.
Yes.
But yeah, we stayed there and did, you know, do what they could do with it. I mean, again, you have limited, you know, things that you can do with it. And, you know, I applaud Chris for putting that together. Cause again, that's someone else that could have just pulled the plug as well.
Yeah. So what would you say have been some of your most memorable photo shoots or competitions over the years that really just stand out that have been an incredible experience for you?
We don't have enough time.
I'm sure.
Let's put it this way. This was my 41st Mr. Olympia.
Wow.
Okay.
Yes.
My 31st Miss Olympia. And I have seen every division that has come after it. I've been at every one of those Olympias. So there's a lot of history there. My first Mr. Olympia I saw was in 1976.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite the history. So what in particular, we have, you know, a lot of obviously women's division listeners. What have you seen the women's side of the divisions? What has been your kind of reaction of how things have evolved and the changes that you've seen in the sport, particularly in bikini over the years?
Well, you know, let's go back to, without women's bodybuilding, you wouldn't have bikini.
Right.
Or any of the other divisions. So each division that has come after it has been a basis in women's bodybuilding. That's why I was super excited to see the Miss Olympia back this past year. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I was the first Miss Olympia that I saw was Corey Everson's first win. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So I saw her win her six Olympias. I saw Linda Murray win her eight. I saw Iris win her 10. I saw Kim Szeski win her four. So, you know, you have to start at the base. It's just like in the men's side. Without men's bodybuilding, all, you know, there'd be no classic physique. There'd be no men's physique. You know, there'd be no 212, obviously, either. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, everything progresses. And as the sport progresses, I mean, once we got to, you know, we did fitness. Well, you had competitors that weren't really good at routines. So take out the routines and that's how you have figure.
Right.
That's that. Now you have competitors that just can't get the build for figure or fitness. Here comes bikini. All right. So now you have competitors that don't fit in bikini, a little more, you know, developed than figure competitors, but they're not as big as bodybuilders. There's your women's physique. You know, now, as we say, we have the athletic look with the very athletic look of wellness. So I think everything progresses. And I mean, it's a natural progression. I mean, you can look at every division going back to Larry Scott, our very first Mr. Olympia, and look at Big Rami. Okay. You could go back to looking at Sonia Gonzalez, the first bikini Olympia champion, Nicole Negroni, the second. Thalia Mello, and compare them to, you know, who we have now, from, you know, Angelica, you know, to, you know, Issa, and, you know, Janet. I mean, and funny thing is, Janet is from that earlier era, you know, mm-hmm. having turned pro in 2013.
She's really evolved over the years.
Yes, absolutely. You know, she was also one of our national bikini overall champions that year.
In your opinion,
and by the way, Janet is the only NPC national bikini overall champion that was ever granted the opportunity to make her pro debut at the Arnold.
Oh wow, I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yes.
So, in your opinion, what does it take for someone like Janet to be able to last in the sport and have longevity?
Perseverance. I think, you know, she's been up and down. There's been years where she wasn't even top five. So there's been times, and I did a post about this, and we talked about it in our interview. And by the way, guys, if you get a chance, go to NBC News Online, look up the interview that Janet and I do backstage at the Olympia. And you'll see where I start saying I've been waiting to do this a long time with her, because we've had this conversation with her, because Janet and I have done a lot of work together, photo shoots and stuff. And my wife and I have talked to her through the years. There's been years where she absolutely was ready to quit. She said, well, I guess they don't want my look, everything else. And then she'd think about it and she'd come back. And, you know, she said this year she just basically, you know, had a mental change of her mental attitude. About, you know, and then especially when it was announced it's going to be in Orlando, and she lives down there, you know, in between Tampa and Orlando, it was really just a mental thing for her. And, you know, she, you know, made some tweaks like everybody else does at her training and things like that. But it was just, I think it was all mental for her. And she's pretty much said that as well. It was a whole different mindset. So people don't think that not having a good mindset, that factors into it. You know?
Oh, I think it's huge. And I think you're spot on. You can see it in her stage presence, her confidence, and she just gives off this aura, you know, this presence. Whatever you're feeling on the inside is definitely shining on the outside.
She speaks about that in the interview. So, you know, definitely go. Don't look at it on Instagram. Go to the full interview on the website or the YouTube channel.
Yeah,
she explains the whole thing about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So do you have any additional advice for those competitors that haven't turned pro? Something that amateur athlete should think about?
Yes, okay. Yes. Seriously, get critiques from the judges, okay? Don't think that the judges are wrong, because it's funny. When you don't win, the judges are wrong, or it's and or politics. But when you win, oh, it's okay. You know, it's funny how there is no politics when you end up winning.
Well,
it's funny how the judges are right finally because you won or you qualified for your pro card. Listen, get the critiques, take them, get them from several judges. Don't just go to one judge. And I'll tell you what, the best way to get a critique, if you can't do it in person, as Amy, as you know, Sandy will stand there for an hour or more contest with notes, talking to everybody.
Till midnight.
If you can't, you're right, on that night. If you can't stay for whatever reason, the best thing to do when you're sending an email to these judges, go to your pictures on NBC News Online from that contest. Click on your name, and as you know, it comes up, it has a big picture, and then there's a whole gallery of your pictures. Take the URL that's in your browser at that point, copy it, send that to the judges. So when they click on it, it goes right to your picture and they can look at all your pictures. Don't try to sit there and download your pictures one by one by one. Okay. Get that link that's in your browser where you are and send that to the judges to get your critique.
Good thoughts.
That way it gives them a more full look at you, because let's be honest, if you're downloading and sending them pictures, you're downloading what you think are your best.
Right.
They need to see you at what you think is your best and what you think is not your best. Yes. Because if you're not sending them the full array, they don't know. They may see something in it, your transition pose. They may see something in part of your back pose, because you see there's a whole array of pictures of you in those galleries.
Yeah, it's incredible. I was really impressed this year with Sandy. One of my athletes had competed at North Americans. She got fourth. And obviously with the format, it was just impossible to stick around and talk to her to get feedback. But she did her homework. She actually picked out this competitor's very first show from years before. And then she picked out the year that she got fifth the year before. And I mean, she talked about her journey. So she not only gave her feedback from what she looked like on North Americans, but I was so impressed that she actually did her homework and looked this athlete up. That shows,
well, you know how that's possible, because
so much dedication.
When you go to your last contest, let's just say it's the USA, the 2020 USA. So when you click on yourself, when you go to NBC News Online and you look down towards the lower right, it has the years and it has all of your photos from every contest that you were ever in that is on NBC News Online. You can go back however far you have competed, mm-hmm. you know, and see all that information.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good advice. I love it. So what's the craziest thing that you've seen backstage, or is there anything that you think that people should kind of be doing when they're backstage? You have that around the NPC gallery that's just, it's so much fun. I feel like you always catch me in the most awkward moments. I'm either eating or like tying someone's boobs in.
the funny thing is that is not planned. It just happens. I'm walking around, and I laugh because I'm like, people are like, oh my God, you caught me again. I'm like, well, you were actually, I was just happened to walking and I'd see you. And I, you know, sometimes I'll just zoom in and, you know,
right.
it is funny. It's fun. I mean, there's so many competitors that the first picture I took of them is with food hanging out of their mouth.
Yeah. That was me. Absolutely.
But I mean, it's just having fun back there. That's to me, that's the main thing, you know?
So what do you think?
I mean, as you could see, I mean, I have fun back there.
You absolutely do. And you make it fun for everybody. I think that the level of the quality of the pictures is just, it's such a memento that you can, because stage shots are wonderful, you know, but it's just neat to, you're so busy on nervous and, you know, on show day, there's so much going on that it's just really neat to see really good quality photos that are picking up just the candid moments, like literally just.
Well, I like to say it's real backstage life.
Yeah. 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 I appreciate that about you. So thank you for providing that. Is there any advice you would give competitors as they're lining up to, before they hit the stage, that they should be doing or focusing on? What are your thoughts there?
Focus on having fun.
Okay.
There's nothing more you can do at that point. When you hit the stage, there's nothing else you can do. It is what it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So going into a different direction,
before we go in a different direction, let me just do this. Okay.
Yeah.
So I just pulled you up on NPC News Online.
Okay.
And I can see your photos all the way back to the 2015 Teen Collegiate Masters Nationals in North American.
Yeah, I've actually competed since 2011, but that's the thing. You guys have evolved and changed so much that you require promoters to get a quality photographer and provide several stage shots, which I liked that change as a promoter. I always felt like it was super important for me. My very first show that I promoted, I made sure that I had a good photographer and that they were going to get plenty of pictures. I also would take my own pictures of just like backstage and things like that and just put them on the Facebook page just so athletes would have something, because that was something that I think you guys have made a really great change in thinking about what the athletes want. You put on all that hard work and then to not have like a quality photo, I just think that that's incredible that you guys do that.
Yeah. So, okay, that's it. I just wanted to say that, out loud.
Awesome. Yeah. So just, this is a random question that somebody had written in. What are some of your pet peeves of the sport?
Let's do a whole episode on that next. Anyways,
okay.
I'm going to tell you my biggest. Okay. So everybody, I just want to say, I want to ask you a question that you all can answer in your heads when you hear this. How much does it cost you to look at those pictures on NPC News Online? The answer is nothing. So when you take those pictures to post them, the biggest pet peeve is those of you that crop off the watermarks for NPC News Online and me and or the other photographers, and you don't even credit us in your text. Not a hashtag, the actual at symbol, not a blind tag either. Because when you forward a photo that has a blind tag, that blind tag does not come through. Some of you will think, you'll have 25 people that you thanked, including family members that were sitting in the 15th row, but you can't put photos courtesy of at NPC News Online official page and or the photographer, whether it be me or somebody else. And I know that Instagram does not let you put the full picture in. Well, guess what? Go on the App Store. There's a million free photo apps that allows you to use the full thing. It jerks my wires when I see people, and especially all of you IFBB pros, this applies to you as well. By Tuesday, my head's ready to explode because 50% of you have put the pictures up from NPC News Online. Why? Because they are the best pictures, but you've cropped off the watermarks and you've given zero credit to the website and or the photographer.
Yeah,
that's my biggest pet peeve.
That's a good.
And I keep telling people, you know, maybe I just won't take your picture next time. Oh, magically my camera didn't work because you seem to just do everything and use the pictures and never credit them. Now, of course, I will be taking the pictures. That's just me getting pissy on that day. But I mean, as you said, we are required to take the pictures, but seriously, folks, it costs you absolutely zero to have those pictures up there.
Yes.
Okay. And it costs you zero to take the time to download them. So please give credit where credit is due.
Absolutely.
You know, and this, like I said, this doesn't just fall for me. This is for every photographer and videographer out there that's working at these contests. You know, that to me, that's the most disrespectful thing you could do. And then you want to sit there and you want to talk to a photographer later or talk to me. And I know that you've used my photos and have never given zero credit.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, that's my biggest pet peeve. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So this might be a little bit too long of a deep dive. We had another question from a listener about how social media has changed the sport. I know we're kind of running out of time. I don't know if you want to give a short answer.
Oh, I could tell you that.
Okay.
As we used to have the NPC News magazine, the very first one came out in 1986. Okay. We were putting together the September, October 2017 issue. At one point that magazine was over 400 pages, high quality paper. It got sent to every member and judges and gyms and things like that. Basically, as the website, our own website evolved, we put our own self out of business, you know, because everybody wants to be insta famous, as I say, and they want instant gratification. And with the website, we were providing that. I mean, as you have seen, you know, Amy, at these national contests and a lot of these pro contests, within an hour or two, your pictures are online.
Yeah, you guys are so fast.
Yeah. I mean, so we have our webmaster at these national contests and these pro contests, and he's literally uploading them in as close to real time as possible. So, I mean, when you have that going on, you know, nobody wants to wait for print to come out, you know, and have this be, you know, 2-3 months down the road, because magazines are printed, you know, magazines were printed 2-3 months in advance, because with advertising and things like that. So, you know, now everything is online. So that's how it's changed. It is, you know, that's why you don't see print magazines much anymore. And that's not just in the fitness industry. It's everywhere. I mean, myself, sure. I worked for Flex Magazine for almost 30 years. You know, in 2015, they were downsizing, and I started working for them in 1985. And, you know, again, it was nothing to do with me personally. It was the fact that with the oncoming digital age, you know, things were changing. And, you know, that's why it changed, you know, changed for us as well. So that's the thing. It's the Insta famous. It's the Instagrams. Although what I did say before the USA, someone asked me about, you know, what to think about when going up there. I'm like, yeah, just remember there's no filters on stage like there is on Instagram. You get to see the real physique and the real person on stage or backstage.
Yeah. So what would you say your absolute favorite part of being in this industry or doing photography, being a part of the bodybuilding world? What's your absolute favorite part of all of this?
Meeting and talking with people.
Yeah. Yeah. You not only are gifted with the camera, but you also, I feel like you have a photographic memory. Would you say that's true?
I guess so, because as my wife Debbie says, she calls me the Rain Man of bodybuilding.
Yeah, you just know every person, it feels like. You
well, just know I know, just name. Like I whipped out those facts on Janet for you real quick, right?
Right. Yeah, it's impressive.
So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I say maybe it's being an only child. And yeah. So, you know, and being, as I said, being born and raised in this. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I think that that's probably it.
Well, I just want to thank you, first of all, for your time. And secondly, for everything that you do for the industry. You truly are a huge proponent of what this organization is and what it is today. You know, the contributions that you make are just, you know, countless. So thank you so much for your time. And I know that our listeners will want to thank you as well. So if you could just let us know some ways that we can reach out and let you know what they thought about the episode or get a hold of you for one of your incredible photo shoots, things like that.
Yeah. Let me also say this. People, everybody keeps saying, oh, we didn't want to bother you. We were afraid to talk to you. I'm no different than any of you. Don't be afraid to come talk to me. And this is any competitor, any other officials, anything. I don't bite. I think I'm pretty fun. As Amy, you've seen me backstage for years.
Yes.
You know, I like what I do. So don't ever be afraid to contact me. Don't ever be afraid to come up and talk to me. Don't ever be afraid to say hello. You know, I feel like I'm back there with all of you. I like being, you know, doing that. I mean, even if I'm shooting the stage as well as running back and doing candidates, I love what I do. So don't be afraid to reach out to me. Now, the easiest way to reach out to me is via email, and it's a pretty easy email. It's JM Mannion, and that's two M's, JMMANION at mpcnewsonline.com. I do have a website, jmmannion.com. You can also get hold of me on Instagram at the around the MPC underscore JM page. That's my public page. I do have a private page, which is JM Mannion. And just like on Facebook, unless I've actually had a real conversation with you and saying hi backstage or a sentence to me backstage is not a real conversation, I don't let people on those pages. Like, I'm not one of those people that has 5,000 friends on Facebook, because on those pages, I put a lot of stuff that's family oriented also that is not for the general public, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, feel free to reach out to me, you know, always watch mpcnewsonline.com. We have a variety of, you know, Instagram pages. We just started the three new MPC wellness pages, as well as we have, you know, the MPC News Online page, you know. We have MPC Fit Body and MPC News TV, which they both have their own websites too. It's the same thing, mpcfitbody.com, mpcnewstv.com. We have the MPC Wellness, MPC Worldwide Wellness, and IFBB Pro League Wellness Instagram and Facebook pages, and Twitter. We're going to be starting more with other things. There's the MPC National page. So, I mean, I'm pretty easy to get hold of. And yeah, it may take me a little bit to get back to you because I do a lot of things, you know. As I say, I'm a lot of times, you know, consumed in the Bat Cave. Everybody that knows that I'm a huge Batman fan, but I will eventually get back to you. It may not be that day. Don't get worried. You're not bothering me. It just may take a couple of days for me to get back to you. That's all, you know. Or unless, like, we're backstage at the USA and Amy starts talking about this podcast, and I'm like, hey, let's make this the first one of 2021. It was that simple. Now, if Amy doesn't talk to me, we wouldn't have this right now, correct?
Well, I'm so appreciative of you coming on today. It means the world. And yes, I've always wanted to ask you. And so, yeah, it just takes asking those questions because you're a nice, approachable guy. So
listen, I know we probably didn't get through all the questions. So whenever you want to schedule part two, you just let me know.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll do that pet peeve part two. Pet peeve part two. I like it. So I will have all of this information, if you didn't catch that, in the show notes. So I'll be getting that from JM here when we hop off. But this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger. And you can find us on Instagram at Glam Girl Bikini or at Prep Life Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our channel and feel free to leave a rating and review. Let us know what you thought of this episode. We would sure appreciate it. Thanks for listening, guys.